I'm trying not to hyperventilate. Spotted Julian yet, man? He finally asks. He speaks in mid-lingo, now that Priam is nowhere to be seen. Not a sight. Meh. The kid is probably trying to be gentle with his fight. Father taught us the silent art, cravat. Julian is a prodigy at it. He thinks I'm better. Cassius frowns. Thinks I'm better at everything, which is understandable. Just got to get him going. Speaking of it, who'd you slag? My insides knot. I make up a lie, and it's a good one. Vague and boring. He only wants to talk about himself now anyway. After all, this is what Cassius was bred for. There are roughly 15 kids who have that same quiet gleam in their eye. Not evil, just excited. And those are the ones to watch, because they're the born killers. Looking around, it's easy to see that Roke was right. There weren't many tough fights. This was forced natural selection. Bottom of the heap getting slaughtered by the top. Hardly anyone is severely injured except a couple of small low drafts. Natural selection sometimes has its surprises. Cassius's fight was easy, he says. He did it right and fair and quick. Crushed the windpipe with a blade jab 10 seconds into squaring up. Caught his fingers oddly, though. Prime. I've made a corpse of the best killer's brother. Dread creeps into me to make a home. Cassius grows quieter when Fitchner saunters in and orders us to the table. One by one, the 50 seats fill, and bit by bit, his face darkens as each chance for Julian to join the table disappears. When the last seat fills, he does not move. It is a cold anger that radiates. Not hot, as I thought it would be. Antonia sits across from us, opposite me, and watches him. Her mouth works, but she says nothing. You don't comfort his sort. And I didn't think her the kind to try. Julian isn't the only one missing. Arya, all curls and dimples, is lying limp on a cold floor somewhere. And Priam is gone. Perfect Priam the Premier, heir of Mars's moons. I heard he was the first sword in the solar system for his birth year. A duelist without peer. I guess he wasn't too lethal with his fist. I look around the tired faces. Who the hell killed him? The board messed that one up, and I wager his mother will cause hell, because he certainly wasn't meant to die. We're wasting the best of us, Cassius murmurs measuredly. Hello, you little shit-eaters! Fitchner yawns, and kicks his feet up onto the table. Now, it might have dawned on you that the passage may as well be called the Culling. Fitchner scratches his groin with his razor's hilt. His manners are worse than mine. And you may think it a waste of good goals, but you're an idiot if you think 50 children make a dent in our numbers. There are more than 1 million goals on Mars, more than 100 million in the solar system. Not all get to be peerless scarred, though, eh? Now, if you think this was vile, consider that the Spartans would kill more than 10% of all children born to them. Nature would kill another 30. We are gory humanitarians in comparison. Of the 600 students that are left, most were in the top 1% of applicants. Of the 600 that are dead, most were in the bottom 1% of applicants. There was no waste. He chuckles and looks around the table with a surprising amount of pride. Except for that idiot, Priam. Yeah, there's a lesson for you lot. He was a brilliant boy. Beautiful, strong, fast, a genius who studied day and night with a dozen tutors. But he was pampered. And someone, I won't say who, because that'd undermine the fun of this whole curriculum, but someone knocked him down onto the stone and then stomped on his trachea till he died. He put his hands behind his head. Now, this is your new family. House Mars, one of 12 houses. No, you are not special because you live on Mars and are in House Mars. Those in House Venus on Venus are not special. They merely fit the house. You get the flow. After the Institute, you're looking for apprenticeships. Hopefully with the families Bellona, Augustus, or Arcos, if you want to do me proud. Prior graduates from House Mars may help you find these apprenticeships, may offer you apprenticeships of their own, or maybe you'll be so successful that you don't need anyone's help. But let us make it crystal. Right now, you are babies. Stupid little babies. Your parents handed you everything. Others wiped your little asses. Cooked your food, fought your wars, tucked your little shiny noses in at night. Rusters dig before they get a chance to screw. They build your cities and find your fuel and pick up your shit. Pinks learn the art of getting someone's jollies off before they even need to shave. Obsidians have the worst gory life you could imagine, nothing but frost and steel and pain. They were bred for their work, trained early for it. All you little princelings and princesses have had to do was look like little versions of Mommy and Daddy and learn your manners and play piano and equestrian and sport. But now, you belong to the Institute, to House Mars, to the Prefecture of Mars, to your colour, to the Society, blah, blah. Fitchner's smirk is lazy. His veiny hand rests on his paunch. Tonight, you finally did something yourselves. You beat a baby just like you. But that's worth about as much as a pink horse fart. Our little society balances on the tip of a needle. The other colours would rip your gory damn heart out, given the chance. And then there's the silvers, the coppers, the blues. You think they'd be loyal to a bunch of babies? You think the obsidians will follow little turds like you? Those baby stranglers would make you their little cuddle slaves if they saw weakness. So, you must show none.
So, what? The Institute is supposed to make us tough.
Huge Titus grunts. No, you colossal oaf. It's supposed to make you smart, cruel, wise, hard. It's supposed to age you 50 years and 10 months and show you what your ancestors did to give you this empire. May I continue? He blows a gum bubble. Now, House Mars. His thin hand scratches his belly. Yeah, we've got a proud house that could maybe even match some of the elder families. We've got politicos, praetors, and judicia. The current arch-governors of Mercury and Europa, a tribune, dozens of praetors, 2 justices, an imperator of a fleet. Even Lorne Au Arcos of the family Arcos, 3rd most powerful family on Mars for those not keeping track, maintains his bonds with us. All of those high-ups are looking for new talent. They picked you from the other candidates to fill the roster. Impress these important men and women, and you'll have an apprenticeship after this. Win, and you'll have your pick of apprenticeships within the house, or an elder family. Maybe even Arcos himself will want you. If that happens, you'll be on the fast track to position, fame, and power.
I lean forward.
But when, I ask.
What is there to win?
He smiles.
At this moment, you are in a remote, terraformed valley in the southernmost part of Valles Marineris. In this valley, there are 12 houses in 12 castles. After orientation tomorrow, you will go to war with your fellow students to dominate the valley by any means at your disposal. Consider it a case study in gaining and ruling an empire.
There are murmurs of excitement. It is a game. And here I thought I would have to study something in a classroom.
And what if you are Primus of the winning house? Antonia asks. She twirls a finger through her golden curls. Then welcome to glory, darling. Welcome to fame and power.
So, I must be Primus. We eat a plain dinner.
When Fitzner leaves, Cassius stirs, his voice becoming cold and filled with dark humour.
Let us all play a game, my friends. We will each say whom we killed. I will start. Nexus Ausilintus. I knew him when we were children, as I know some of you.
I broke his trachea with my fingers.
No one speaks.
Come now. Family should not keep secrets.
Still, no one answers.
Severo is the first to leave, making his derision for Cassius's game clear. First to eat, first to sleep. I want to follow. Instead, I make small talk with Peaceful Roke and Massive Titus, after Cassius gives up on his game and retires as well. Titus is impossible to like. He's not funny, but everything is a joke to him. It's like he's sneering at me, at everyone, even though he is smiling. I want to hit him, but he doesn't give me a reason. Everything he says is perfectly innocuous. Yet I hate him. It's like he doesn't think me a human. Instead, I'm just a chess piece, and he's waiting to move me around. No, shove me around. He somehow forgot to be 17 or 18 like the rest. He is a man. Taller than 2 meters, easy, maybe nearing 2.5 meters. Lithe Roke, on the other hand, reminds me so much of my brother Kieran. If Kieran could kill. His smiles are kind, his words patient and wistful and wise, just as they had been earlier. Leah, the girl who looks like a limping baby deer, follows him everywhere. He's patient with her, in a way I couldn't be. Late in the night, I look for the places where the students died. I cannot find them. The stairs no longer exist. The castle has swallowed them. I find rest in a long dormitory, filled with thin mattresses. Wolves howl from the shifting mists that cloak the highlands beyond our castle. I find sleep quickly.
Chapter 21 Our Dominion.
Fitzner wakes us from the long dormitories in the dark of morning. Grumbling, we roll out of double bunk beds and set out from the keep to the castle square, where we stretch, then set off at a run. We lope easily in the 0.37 grav. Clouds drop soft showers. The canyon walls, 50 kilometers west and 40 kilometers east of our little valley, tower 6 kilometers high. Between them is an ecosystem of mountains, forests, rivers and plains. Our battlefield. Ours is a highland territory. There rise mossy hills and craggy peaks that dip into U-shaped grassy glens. Mist blankets all, even the thick forests that lie like homespun quilts over the foothills. Our castle stands on a hill just north of a river in the middle of a bowl-like glen, half grass, half woods. Greater hills cup the glen in a semicircle to the north and south.
I should like it here. Io would have. But without her I feel as lonely as our castle looks on its high, removed hill. I reach for the locket, for our Himanthus. Neither is with me. I feel empty in this paradise. Three walls of our hill castle stand atop 80 meters stone cliffs. The castle itself is huge. Its walls rise 30 meters. The gatehouse swells out from the walls as a fortress with turrets. Inside the walls, our square keep is part of the northwestern wall and rises 50 meters. A gentle slope leads up from the glen's floor to the castle's western gate opposite the keep. We run down this slope along a lonely dirt road. Mist embraces us. I relish the cold air. It purifies me after hours of fitful sleep. The mist burns away as the summer day dawns. Deerling, thinner and faster than the creatures of earth, graze in the fir woods. Birds circle above. A single raven promises eerie things. Sheep litter the field, and goats wander the high rocky hills we run up in a line of 50 and 1. Others of my house may see animals of earth, or curious creatures the carvers decided to make for fun. But I see only food and clothing. The sacred animals of Mars make their home in our territory. Woodpeckers hammer oak and fir. At night, wolves howl across the highlands and stalk during the day through the woodlands. There are snakes near the river. Vultures in the quiet gulches. Killers running beside me. What friends I have. If only Lauren or Kieran or Mateo were here to watch my back. Someone I could trust. I'm a sheep wearing wolves' clothing in a pack of wolves. As Fichtna runs us up the rocky heights, Leah, the girl with the limp, falls. He lazily nudges at her with his foot till we carry her on our shoulders. Roke and I bear the load. Titus smirks, and only Cassius helps when Roke tires. Then Pollux, a lean, craggy-voiced boy with buzzed hair, takes over for me. He sounds like he's been smoking burners since he was 2. We trudge through a summer valley of forests and fields. Bugs nip at us there. The gold brows drip with sweat, but I do not. This is an icy bath compared to the rigors of my old fry suit. All about me are trim and fit, but Cassius, Severo, Antonia, Quinn, the bloody damn fastest girl or thing I've ever seen on 2 feet, Titus, 3 of his new friends, and I could leave the rest behind. Only Fichtna with his grav boots could outpace us. He bounds along like a deerling, then he chases one down and his razor whips out. It encircles the deerling's throat, and he contracts the blade to kill the animal. "Supper," he says, grinning. "Drag it." "You could have killed it closer to the castle," Severo mutters. Fichtna scratches his head and looks around. "Did anyone else hear a squat, ugly little goblin go, well, whatever sound goblins make?" "Drag it." Severo grabs the deer's leg. "Dickwit." We reach the summit of a rocky height, 5 kilometers southwest of our castle. A stone tower dominates the peak. From the top, we survey the battlefield. Somewhere out there, our enemies do the same. The theater of war stretches to the south farther than we can see. A snowy mountain range fills the western horizon. To the southeast, a primordial wood knots the landscape. Dividing the two is a lush plain split by a massive southbound river, the Argos, and its tributaries. Farther south, past the plains and rivers, the ground dips away into marshes. I cannot see beyond. A great floating mountain hovers 2 kilometers up in the bluish sky. It is Olympus, Fichtna explains, an artificial mountain where the proctors watch each year's class. Its peak shimmers with a fairy tale castle. Leah shuffles closer to stand beside me.
How does it float?
She asks sweetly. I haven't the faintest clue. I look north. Two rivers in a forested valley split our northern territory, which is at the edge of a vast wilderness. They form a V pointing southwest to the lowlands, where they eventually form one tributary to the Argos. Surrounding the valley are the highlands, dramatic hills and dwarf mountains scarred with gulches where mist still clings.
This is Phobos Tower, Fitchner says.
The tower lies in the far southwest of our territory. He drinks from a canteen while we go thirsty, and points northwest where the two rivers meet in the valley to form their V. A massive tower crowns a distant dwarf mountain range just beyond the junction.
And that is Deimos.
He traces an imaginary line to show us the bounds of House Mars's territory. The eastern river is called the Furor. The western, which runs just south of our castle, is the Metos. A single bridge spans the Metos. An enemy would have to cross it to enter between the V into the valley and strike northeast across easy wooded ground to reach our castle.
This is a slagging joke, isn't it?
Severo asks Fitchner.
Whatever do you mean, goblin? Fitchner pops a gum bubble. Our legs are as wide as a pink horse. All these mountains and hills, and anyone can just walk right in the front door. It's a perfect flat passage from the lowlands right to our gate, just one stinking river to cross.
Pointing out the obvious, eh? You know, I really do not like you, you foul little goblin.
Fitchner stares at Severo for a purposeful moment, and then shrugs.
Anyway, I'll be on Olympus.
What does that mean, Proctor?
Cassius asks sourly. He doesn't like the look of things either. Though his eyes are red from weeping through the night for his dead brother, it hasn't dulled his impressiveness.
I mean, it's your problem, little prince, not mine. No one's going to fix anything for you. I am your proctor, not your mommy. You're in school, remember? So if your legs are open, well, make a chastity belt to protect the soft spot.
There's general grumbling.
Could be worse, I say.
I point past Antonia's head toward the southern plains where an enemy fortress spans a great river.
We could be exposed like those poor bastards.
Those poor bastards have crops and orchards, Fitchner muses. You have.
He looks over the ledge to find the deer he killed.
Well, Goblin here left the deer behind, so you have nothing. The wolves will eat what you do not.
Unless we eat the wolves, Severo mutters, drawing strange looks from the rest of our house.
So, we have to get our own food.
Antonia points to the lowlands.
What are they doing?
A black dropship slides down from the clouds. It settles in the center of the grassy plain between us and the distant enemy river fortress of Ceres. Three obsidians and a dozen tin pots stand guard as Browns hustle out to set hams, steaks, biscuits, wine, milk, honey, and cheeses onto a disposable table 8 kilometers from Phobos Tower.
A trap, obviously, Severo snorts.
Thank you, goblin, Cassius sighs, but I haven't had breakfast.
Circles ring his reckless eyes. He glances over at me through the crowd of our fellows and offers a smile.
Up for a race, Darrow?
I start with surprise, then I smile.
On your mark.
And he's off. I've done dumber things to feed my family.
I did dumber things when someone I loved died. Cassius is owed the company as he races down the steep hillside. 48 kids watch us scamper to fill our bellies. None follow.
Bring me a slice of honeyed ham, Fitzner shouts.
Antonia calls us idiots. The dropship floats away as we leave the highlands behind for gentler terrain. 8 kilometers in 0.376 grav, Earth standard, is a cinch. We scramble down rocky hillsides, then hit the lowland plains at full tilt through ankle-high grass. Cassius beats me to the tables by a body length. He's fast. We each take a pint of the ice water on the table. I drink mine faster. He laughs.
Looks like the house Ceres mark on their flagpole. The harvest goddess.
Cassius points over across the green plains to the fortress. A few trees dot the several kilometers between us and the castle. Pennants flap from their ramparts. He pops a grape into his mouth. We should take a closer look before chowing down. A little scouting. Agreed. But something isn't right here, I say quietly. Cassius laughs at the open plain.
Nonsense. We'd see trouble if it was coming. And I don't think any one of them is going to be faster than us two. We can strut up to their gates and take a shit if we so like.
I do have something brewing. I touch my stomach. Yet still, something is wrong. And not just in my belly. It's 6 kilometers of open ground between the river fortress and us. The river gurgles in the distance to the right. Forest to the far left. Plains in front. Mountains beyond the river. Wind rustles the long grass, and a sparrow coasts in with the breeze. It swoops low to the ground, before flinching up and away. I laugh loudly, and lean against the table.
They are in the grass, I whisper. A trap. We can steal sacks from them and carry more of this back, he says loudly.
Run?
Pixie.
He grins, though neither of us is sure if we're allowed to start the fighting during orientation day. Whatever. On three, we kick apart the disposable table's legs till we each have a meter of duroplastic as a weapon. I scream like a madman and sprint toward the spot where the sparrow fled, Cassius at my side. 5 house Ceres gulls rise from the grass. They're startled by our mad rush. Cassius catches the first in the face with a proper fencer's lunge. I'm less graceful. My shoulder is stiff and sore. I scream and break my weapon across one of their knees. He goes down howling. Duck someone's swing. Cassius deflects it. We dance as two. There's 3 of them left. One squares up with me. He doesn't have a knife or a bat. No, he has something I'm far more interested in. A question mark of a sword. A sling blade for reaping grain. He faces me with his back hand on his hip and the crooked blade out like a razor. If it were a razor, I'd be dead. But it's not. I make him miss, block one of Cassius's attacker's blows, lurch forward at my attacker. I'm much quicker than he, and my grip is like durosteel to his, so I take his sling blade and his knife before I punch him down. When he sees how I twirled the sling blade in my hand, the last uninjured boy knows it's time to surrender. Cassius jumps high in the 0.376 grav and executes an unnecessary twirling sideways kick to the boy's face. Reminds me of the dancers and leapers of Lycos. Cravat, the silent dance. Eerily similar to the boast dancing of young reds. Nothing is silent about the boys' curses. I feel no pity for these students. They all murdered someone the night before, just like me. There are no innocents in this game. The only thing that worries me is seeing how Cassius dispatched his victims. He is grace and finesse. I am rage and momentum. He could kill me in a second if he knew my secret.
What a lark, he croons. You were gory terrifying. You just took his weapon. Gory fast. Glad we weren't paired earlier. Prime stuff. What are you to say for yourselves, you sneaking fools?
The captured gulls just swear at us. I stand over them and cock my head.
Is this the first time you've lost at something?
No answer. I frown.
Well, that must be embarrassing.
Cassius's face shines. For a moment he's forgotten his brother's death. I haven't. I feel darkness. Hollow. Evil when the adrenaline fades. Is this what Io wanted? For me to play games?
Fitzner arrives in the air above us, clapping his hands. His grav boots glimmer golden. He's got his ham slice between his teeth.
Reinforcements come! He laughs.
Titus and a half dozen of the faster boys and girls run toward us from the highlands. Opposite, a golden shape rises from the distant river fortress and flies toward us. A beautiful woman with short cropped hair settles next to Fitchner in the air. The proctor of the house, Ceres. She carries a bottle of wine and two glasses.
Mars, a picnic,
she calls, referring to him by his house's deity.
So, who arranged for this drama, Ceres? Fitzner asks.
Oh, Apollo, I suppose. He's lonely up in his mountain estates. Here, this is Zinfandel from his vines. Much better than last year's varietal.
Delicious, Fitzner proclaims. But your boys were squatting in the grass, almost as if they expected the picnic to spontaneously manifest.
Suspicious?
No.
Details, Proctor Ceres laughs. Pedantic details.
Well, here's a detail. It seems two of mine are worth five of yours this year, my dear.
These pretty boys, Ceres snickers. I thought the vain ones went to Apollo and Venus.
Oh-ho! Well, yours certainly fight like housewives and farmers. Well placed they were.
Don't judge them yet, you cad. They are mid-draft picks. My high drafts are elsewhere, earning their first calluses.
Learning the ovens. Huzzah! Fitzner declares, ironically. Bakers do make the best rulers, so I've heard.
She nudges him. Oh, you devil! No wonder you interviewed for the Rage Night post, such a scoundrel.
They clink their glasses together as we watch from the ground.
How I love Orientation Day, Ceres titters. Mercury just let 100,000 rats loose in Jupiter's citadel. But Jupiter was ready because Diana tattled and arranged the delivery of 1,000 cats. Jupiter's boys won't go hungry like last year. Cats will be as fat as Barkus.
Diana's a harlot, Fitchner declares.
Be kind.
I was. I sent her a great phallic cake filled with live woodpeckers.
You didn't.
I did.
You beast!
Ceres caresses his arm, and I note the free, loving demeanor these people have. I wonder if other proctors are lovers as well.
Her fortress will be riddled with holes. Oh, the sound must be horrible. Well played, Mars. They say Mercury is the trickster, but your japes always have a certain... flair.
Flair, eh? Well, I'm sure I could rustle up some tricks for you on Olympus.
Huzzah!
She coos suggestively. They toast again, floating above their sweating and bloody students. I can't help but laugh. These people are mad. Bloody damn crazy in their empty golden heads. How are they my rulers?
Oi, Fitch, if you don't mind. What are we supposed to do with these farmers?
Cassius calls up. He pokes one of our injured captives on the nose.
What are the rules? Eat them, Fitzner cries. And Dara, put down that gory side. You look like a grain reaper.
I don't drop it.
It is close to the shape of my sling blade from home, not as sharp, because it isn't meant to kill, but the balance is no different.
You know, you could let my children go and give them back the reaping scythe,
Ceres suggests to us.
Give me a kiss and you have a deal, Cassius calls up.
The Imperator's boy? She asks Fitchner.
He nods.
Come ask for one when you're scarred, little prince.
She looks over her shoulder.
Until then, I would advise you and the Reaper to run.
We hear the hooves before we see the painted horses galloping at us across the plain. They come from the opened gates of House Ceres' castle. The girls on the horses' backs carry nets.
They gave you horses? Horses?
Fitchner complains.
That is so unfair.
We run and barely make it to the woods. I didn't like my first encounter with horses. They still scare the piss out of me, all snorting and stomping. Cassius and I gasp for breath. My shoulder aches. Two of Titus's reinforcements are captured as they find themselves stranded in open ground. Bold Titus knocks a horse over and is laughing as he's about to lay waste to one of the girls with his boot. Ceres zaps him with a stun fist and makes peace with Fitchner. The stun fist causes Titus to piss himself. Only Severo is careless enough to laugh. Cassius says something about bad manners, but he snickers quietly. Titus notices.
Are we allowed to kill them or not?
Titus growls that night at dinner. We eat the leftovers from Bacchus's feast.
Or am I going to get stunned every time?
Well, the point isn't to kill them, Fitchner says. So no. Let's not go around massacring your classmates, you mad ape.
But we did before, Titus protests.
What is wrong with you? Fitchner asks. The passage was where the culling is done. It's no longer survival of the fittest, you mad, stupid, colossal sack of muscle. What would be the point if we now had the fittest just murder each other till only a few are left?
There are new tests to pass now.
Ruthlessness. Antonia crosses her arms. So now it's not acceptable. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, it better be acceptable.
Titus grins broadly. He's been boasting all night about knocking over the horse, as if it'd make everyone forget the piss that stained his pants. Some have. He's already gathered a pack of hounds. Only Cassius and I seem to have an ounce of his respect, but even we're smirked at. So is Fitchner. Fitchner sets down his honeyed ham.
Let us clarify, children, so this water buffalo doesn't go around stomping on skulls. Ruthlessness is acceptable, dear Antonia. If someone dies by accident, that is understandable. Accidents happen to the best of us. But you will not murder each other with scorchers. You will not hang people from your ramparts unless they're already dead. Medbots are on standby in case any medical attention is direly needed. They are fast enough to save lives, most of the time. Remember, though, the point is not to kill. We don't care if you're as ruthless as Vlad Dracula. He's still lost. The point is to win. That's what we want.
And that simple test of cruelty is already passed.
We want you to show us your brilliance. Like Alexander, like Caesar, Napoleon, and Meriwether. We want you to manage an army, distribute justice, arrange for provisions of food and armor. Any fool can stick a blade into another's belly. The school's role is to find the leaders of men, not the killers of men. So the point, you silly little children, is not to kill, but to conquer. And how do you conquer in a game where there are 11 enemy tribes?
Take them out, one at a time.
Titus answers knowingly.
No, ogre!
Dumbass.
Severo snickers to himself.
Titus's pack quietly watches the smallest boy in the Institute. No threats are snarled. No faces twitch. Just a silent promise. It's hard to remember that they are all geniuses. They look too pretty, too athletic, too cruel to be geniuses.
Anyone besides Ogre have a guess?
Fitchner asks. No one answers.
You make one tribe out of 12. I finally say. By taking slaves.
Just like the society. Build on the backs of others. It isn't cruel. It is practical.
Fitzner claps mockingly. Prime, Reaper. Prime. Looks like someone is bucking for Primus.
Everyone shifts in agitation at that last bit.
Fitzner pulls a long box from under the table. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is what you use to make slaves.
He pulls out our standard.
Protect this. Protect your castle. And conquer all the others.
Chapter 22. The Tribes.
Fitchner is gone in the morning. In his chair lies the standard. It is a 1 foot length of iron tipped with our howling wolf. A serpent coils beneath the wolf's feet. The star-tipped pyramid of the society beneath that. A 5 foot oak pole connects to the iron end. If the castle is our home, the standard is our honour. With it, we are able to turn enemies into our slaves by pressing it to their foreheads. There a wolf sigil will appear until another standard is pressed to the forehead. Slaves must obey our express commands, or forever be shamed. I sit across from the standard in the morning dark, eating Apollo's leftovers. A wolf calls out in the mist. Its howl comes through the keep's high window. Tall Antonia is the first to join me. She glides in like a lonely tower or a beautiful golden spider. I haven't decided which way her personality runs. We exchange glances but no greetings. She wants Primus. Cassius and Raspy Pollux saunter in next. Pollux grumbles about having to go to bed without Pinks to tuck him in.
A positively hideous standard, don't you think?
Antonia complains.
They could at least have given it a splash of colour. I think it should be draped with red for rage and blood.
It's not too heavy.
Cassius hefts the standard by its pole.
Reckoned it'd be gold.
He admires the golden Primus hand within the block of black stone. He wants it too.
And they gave us a map. Swell.
A new stone map dominates one of the walls. The detail near our castle is remarkable, the rest less so. The fog of war. Cassius claps me on the back and joins in eating. He doesn't know I heard him weep again in the night. We shared a new bunk in a barracks in the keep's high tower. Many others still sleep in the main tower. Titus and his friends have taken the low tower, even though they don't have enough bodies to fill it. Most of the house is woken by the time Severo drags in a dead wolf by its legs. It's already gutted and skinned.
"Goblin has brought victuals," Cassius applauds daintily.
We will need firewood. Does anyone know how to make a fire?
Severo does. Cassius grins.
Of course you do, goblin.
Found the sheep too easy to kill? I ask. Where'd you get the weapon?
Born with them. His fingernails are bloody. Antonia wrinkles her nose.
Where in the hell were you raised?
Severo presents his middle finger to her, the crux.
Ah.
Antonia sniffs.
Hell, then.
So, as I'm sure you've all noticed, it will be some time before anyone has enough bars of merit to become Primus,
Cassius declares, when we've all gathered around the table.
Naturally, I was thinking that we need a leader before Primus is chosen.
He stands and scoots away from Severo so that his fingers rest on the edge of the standard.
In order for us to function, we must have immediate and coordinated decisions.
And which of you two fools do you think it should be?
Antonia asks dryly. Her large eyes glance from him to me. She turns to regard the others, voice sweet like thick syrup.
At this point, what makes any of us better suited to lead than anyone else? They got us dinner. And breakfast,
Leah says meekly from beside Roke. She gestures to the leftover picnic victuals.
While running right into a trap,
Roke reminds everyone. Antonia nods sagely.
Yes, yes. A wise point. Rashness can hurt us.
But they did fight free,
Roke finishes, earning a glare from Antonia.
With table legs against real weapons, Titus rumbles his approval with a qualification, but then they fled and left the food behind. So it was Fitchner who gave us the food. They would have given it to the enemy, delivering food like Browns.
Yeah, that's a twist on what happened,
Cassius says.
Titus shrugs. I only saw you running like a little pixie.
Cassius goes cold.
Watch your manners, Goodman.
Titus holds up his hands.
Merely observing. Why so angry, little prince? You watch your manners, Goodman, or we'll have to trade our words for blades.
Cassius wields his looted pitchfork and points it at Titus. You heed, Titus Owl Ladros. Titus holds gaze with him, then glances over at me, grouping me with Cassius. Suddenly, Cassius and I form a tribe in everyone's eyes. The paradigm shifts that quickly. Politics. I take my time twirling my looted knife between my fingers. The whole table watches the knife, Severo especially. My red right hand has collected 1,000,000 metric tons of helium-3 with its dexterity, my left 500,000. The dexterity of an average low red would startle these golds. I dazzle them. The knife is like a hummingbird's wings in my nimble fingers. I look calm, but my mind is racing. We have all killed. Those were the stakes. What are they now? Titus has already made it clear that he wants to kill. I could stop him now, I wager, drive my knife into his neck. But the thought almost makes me drop my blade. I feel Io's death in my hands. I hear the wet thump of Julian dying. I can't bear the blood, especially when it doesn't seem necessary. I can back this huge puppy down. I level my eyes coldly at Titus. His smile is slow, the disdain barely noticeable. He's calling me out. I have to fight him, or something, if he doesn't look away. That's what wolves do, I think. My knife spins and spins, and suddenly Titus is laughing. He looks away. My heart slows. I've won. I hate politics. Especially in a room full of alphas.
Of course I hear you, Cassius. You're standing 10 feet away.
Titus chuckles. Titus doesn't think he's strong enough to challenge Cassius and me openly, even with his pack. He saw what we did to the Ceres boys. But just like that, the lines are drawn.
I stand suddenly, confirming that I am with Cassius. It strips Titus of any momentum.
"Is there anyone who wouldn't want either of us to lead?"
I ask.
"I wouldn't want Antonia to lead. She's a bitch," Severo says.
Antonia shrugs her agreement but cocks her head.
"Cassie, why are you in such a rush to find us a leader?"
she asks.
"If we do not have one leader, then we will fracture and do as we each think is best," Cassia says. "That's how we lose."
"Instead of what you think is best?"
she says, with a soft smile and a nod.
"I see."
"Don't give me that condescension, Antonia. Priam even agreed we needed one leader."
"Who is Priam?"
Titus laughs. He's trying to get attention back on himself once more. Every gold kid on the planet knew Priam. Now Titus tries to make it clear who killed him, and the others take note. Momentum regained. Except, I know Titus didn't kill Priam. They wouldn't put someone like him in with Priam. They would have put a weakling in there. So Titus is a liar, as well as a bully.
"Ah, I see. Because you plotted with Priam, you know what needs to be done, Cassius.
You know better than all of us."
Antonia waves at the table.
"You're telling us we're helpless without your guidance."
She's trapped him. And me too.
"Listen, boys. I know you're eager to lead," she continues. "I get that. We are all leaders by nature. Each person in this room is a born genius, a born captain. But that is why the Primus merit system exists. When someone has earned 5 fingers of merit and is ready to be Primus, then we will have a leader. Until then, I say we hold out. If Cassius or Darrow earns it, then so be it. I'll do whatever they command, obedient as a pink, simple as a red."
She gestures to the others.
"Until then, I think one of you should also have a chance to earn it. After all, it may decide your career."
She's clever. And she's sunk us. Every brat in the room was no doubt wishing they'd been more assertive from the get-go, wishing they could have another chance to make people notice them. Now Antonia gives it to them. This'll be chaos. And she may end up as Primus. Definitely a spider.
"Look!"
Leah says from Roke's side. A horn bellows beyond the castle. The standard chooses that moment to shimmer. Snake and wolf shed iron for gleaming gold. Not only that, but the stone map on the wall comes alive. Our wolf banner ripples over a miniature of our castle. Ceres's banner does the same. No other castles mark the map, but the banners of the undiscovered houses flap off in the map's key. No doubt they'll find a home as soon as we scout the surrounding territory. The game has begun. And now everyone wants to be Primus. I see why democracy is illegal. First comes yelling, frustration, indecision, disagreement, ideas, scout, fortify, gather food, lay traps, blitz, raid, defense, offense. Pollux spits. Titus knocks him out cold. Antonia leaves. Severo says something snide to Titus and drags his wolf off to God knows where, never having lit a fire. It's like my Lambda drill team whenever a head talk would take an hour sick. That's how I learned I could drill. Barlow snuck off to take a smoke, and I hopped on the rig and did as I thought was best. I do the same now, as the children bicker. Cassius, Roke, and Leah, who follows Roke everywhere, come with me, though Cassius likely thinks we follow him. We agree that the others will not know what to do, and so will inevitably do nothing today. They will guard the castle, or seek out wood for a fire, or cluster around the standard for fear of it walking off. I don't know what to do. I don't know if our enemies are slinking through the hills toward us. I don't know if they are making alliance against Mars. I don't know how the damn game is even played. But for some reason, I assume that not all of the other houses will fall to discord like this. We of Mars seem more prone to disagreement. I ask Cassius what he thinks we should do.
Once, I challenged this prancing oaf to a duel for disrespecting my family, an Augustus fop. He was very methodical,
tightened his gloves, tied back his pretty hair, swished his razor as he did before every gory practice bout he's ever had at the Aegea Martial Club.
And? And I hooked him and stabbed him through the kneecap while he was still swishing his razor in preparation.
He catches Leah's disapproval.
What? The duel had begun.
I'm foxy, but I'm not a beast.
I just win.
I feel like you all think that. I say,
we
all, I mean. They don't notice my slip-up. His point stands. Our house can't attack an enemy in our state, but an enemy could attack us as we run about preparing and ruin all my hopes of rising within the society. So, information. We need to know if our enemies are in a glen half a kilometre to the north, or if they are 15 kilometres south. Are we at a corner of the playing field, or in the centre? Are there enemies in the highlands? North of the highlands? Cassius and I agree. We must scout. We split up. Cassius and I head to Phobos, and then move counterclockwise. Leah and Rogue strike to Deimos and scout clockwise. We're to meet at dusk. We don't see a soul from the top of Phobos. The lowlands are empty of horses and Ceres' fighters, and the highland range to the south is full of locks and goats. Southeast, atop a high dwarf mountain, we glimpse part of the great woods to the south and southeast. An army of giants could be hiding there for all we know, and we can't investigate. It would take half a day to cover the distance to even make it close to the tree line. Some 10 kilometres from our castle, we find a weather-worn stone fort upon a low hill guarding a pass. Inside is a rustic survival box of iodine, food, a compass, rope, 6 duro bags, a toothbrush, sulphur matches, and simple bandages. We store the items in a clear duro bag. So, supplies have been hidden about the valley. Something tells me there are more important items hidden in the countryside than little survivor kits. Weapons? Transportation? Armor? Technology? They can't mean for us to make war with sticks and stones and metal tools. And if they don't want us to kill each other, stun weapons must soon replace our metal ones. We earn nasty sunburns that first day. The mist chills them as we return. Titus and his pack, 6 now, have just returned from a fruitless incursion to the plains. They've killed 2 goats but don't have a fire to cook with since Severo slipped off somewhere. I don't tell them about my matches. Cassius and I agree that Titus, if he wants to be the big man, should at least be able to conquer fire. Severo, wherever he is, must agree as well. Titus's boys hit metal on stone, trying to create sparks, but the stones of the castle don't spark. Clever proctors. Titus's pack makes the dregs, the low drafts, fetch wood, despite the fact that they have no fires. They all go hungry that night. Only Roke and Leah don't. They get some of our survival bars. I like the pair, even if they are golds, and I excuse befriending them by telling myself that I do it only to build my own tribe. Cassius seems to think that fast mid-draft girl, Quinn, will be useful, but he can make himself think that about most pretty girls. The tribes grow, and the first lesson is already underway. Antonia finds friends with a squat, sour, curly-headed fellow named Scipio, and she manages to send groups armed with shovels and axes found in the castle to garrison Deimos and Phobos. The girl may be a spoiled witch, but at least she isn't stupid. Then Titus's pack steals their axes as they sleep, and I revise my opinion. Cassius and I scout together. On the third day, we see smoke rising in the distance, maybe some 20 kilometers to the east. It is like a beacon in the dusk. Enemy scouting parties would be out like us. If it were closer, or we had horses, we could investigate. Or if we had more men, we might set out overnight and plan a raid for slaves. The distance and our lack of coherence makes all the difference. Between us and the smoke are ravines and gulches that could hide war bands. Then there's many kilometers of plains to walk exposed. We won't make the trek. Not when somehow